Hello and welcome to episode 169 of Enough. My name is Mike Hurley and I am joined, as always, by your host, the man himself, the Grand Poobah. That is Mr. Patrick Rowan.
Poobah.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you. I mean, it's been, it's been like an exciting week or so since we last talked.
A long week.
I mean, so you got an iPhone 5, didn't you?
Yeah, I got one, yeah.
Yeah, of course you did. How's that working out for you?
I'm loving it very much.
Yeah, you like it?
I love it.
The kids seem to be liking theirs.
Yeah, I really do. I got the white one as well, so I have no problems.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention the whole scratching thing, but yeah, there's that.
It's not a problem.
So couple of things I like to have top of mind, and I kind of want to get this all out there before I forget it. So we're just going to dive right in. I hope that's okay with people.
No, just do it.
No chit-chat. No time for that. All right. I've been kicking around a thought in my head for a while. And here it is. When we dig up past civilizations, we uncover them, I'm thinking of Egypt and ancient Greece and, Mesopotamia and all of these past civilizations, and we, dig up their stuff, and we try to learn about them, and we try to learn about the culture, and we send stuff around to museums around the world, and people parade through those museums to look at the stuff. What is the stuff that they're looking at? Are they looking at, and this is, obviously in general, are they looking at the business documents of some ancient Egyptian corporation? Are we going to see the great treasures unfolded at some, of some farming cooperatives, venture capitalization funding, or something like that? I mean, are we like, no. We want to see the pottery. We want to see the architecture. We want to see the art. It is the art that gives us the window into the culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is the creative arts and the practical arts, that being architecture, writing. Writing can be a creative art too. But it is these arts that really are what are left as far as we are concerned with the civilization. And in fact, for the most part, everything else has either disintegrated or we just ignore it. I mean, sure, to the historians and such, the business documents, stuff like that, that might be interesting, right? And maybe, we dig up some ancient, Egyptian tablet with some hieroglyphs on it that really are hieroglyphs, their way of documenting some business transaction. But what we average people are interested in is its artistic value. It's the hieroglyphs may be, it may say on some little plaque next to it while sitting in this glass case beautifully lit from several advantageous angles, may say, oh, this is documenting a business transaction. We don't care. We're looking at the beauty of the language. We are looking at it because not of what it says to us about the culture, but how it makes us feel. For the same reason we evaluate and look at most art is, it should evoke an emotion, it should evoke a feeling, and it should evoke some sort of connection at a deep yet difficult to explain level, at least art at its best, right? And in fact, I would argue that our enjoyment of art is often driven by what we don't know as much as about what we know. I'll give you an example of that. One of the reasons the Mona Lisa has become so revered is because at its heart, it's a portrait. It's a portrait no different than the hundreds of thousands of portraits that were done during that time. People both, important, non-important, the portraits were like, the Instagram of that time, as it were. But what makes the Mona Lisa so compelling is the smile, right? It's that sly smile she's got on her face. And the fact that we don't know why. For all we know, there could have been, Leonardo making some joke off, outside the frame, and she's trying to like hold her composure. It could be someone's tickling her feet for all we know. We don't know, right? All we know is here's this young, beautiful Italian lady with this sly smile. And this beautiful painting of her. And what's most interesting about it is what we don't know. And so I bring this back around to the idea that 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years from now, when they dig up this ancient civilizations, these ancient civilizations, what will be left behind? And more specifically, of the internet, what will be the most interesting? Will it be the equipment, the hard drives and the routers and the the cables and the, will that be of interest? Will the data be of great interest? And what of that data, right? Are we going to be interested in email exchanges? Yeah, that'll be interesting to some historians and, we'll give a clue into. But I would argue it's the creative expression. It's the art. It's the, it's the things that we're adding to it that are creative at a level of excellence that it gives a clear window and picture into the culture in the same way that the treasures of King Tut did, in the same way that the ruins at Olympia did, in the same ways that you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And that when we approach what we are doing on it in that way, perhaps it will help to elevate it that much more. Just a thought.
It's a good thought.
Thank you. I mean, I think a lot of people, most people see, will listen to this and think, oh, well, does everything have to be art? No. But it should cause you to at least take a pause and maybe raise your game here and there a little bit.
Like, I think that anything that you enjoy, you should make like an art. If you take care in something, you should turn it into an art form, because that's kind of what art is. It's people's passion for things, or it's a care or a love for something, and it becomes like an art for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's, it does, just because you don't paint or just because you don't compose symphonies, just because you don't write amazing books like Pat does, doesn't mean that what you create is an art. Like, I consider me sitting here and gassing with you for an hour, this is my art. This is what I create. This is what my hands make.
Mm. Certainly what you do on Command Space is an art form.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have tremendous respect for anyone who can interview well, and you do a great job of that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You want to know where this really kind of bubbled up to the surface for me this past weekend?
Yeah.
This past weekend I went to on Saturday I was at the Minnesota Bloggers Conference, which is 3 years running now. A kind of mini day-long conference for Minnesota bloggers. It's about a couple hundred people there, 200-300. It's pretty great. One of the sessions that my friend Michael Roventin put on was the very Link Beatty titled 15 WordPress plugins you need right now and 5 that will totally blow your mind or something, right? Mm-hmm. And it was great. And he went through a bunch of WordPress plugins, and some of them I'd heard about before but had never really considered and that sort of thing. And one of these that I had heard about before but never really considered was one that's now part of WordPress's Jetpack plugin collection called After the Deadline. And what After the Deadline is it's a not only a spelling checker, but it enhances the built-in spell checker in WordPress and adds grammar checking as well, and it does it through artificial intelligence algorithms. And it's I kind of poo-poo grammar checkers in general, just because many of them are kind of hard and fast and don't take style into account and things like that. But I gotta tell you, after this after the session, I gave it another shot, and I absolutely fell in love. And I went through on patrickroan.com like about 20 or 30 posts of my past posts and went through it with After the Deadline, and it caught things that I, after reading them dozens upon dozens of times, didn't catch. Both silly typos, stupid mistakes, but also things that are like, yeah, I guess that could have been worded better, right? And I was very impressed and surprised with how well it did. And this got me to thinking about, like, no one's ever going to notice this. The three people that read my personal blog are never going to know, that I made these corrections, especially not on past posts, But I started thinking about it. The reason why I do these things is not for those three people. It's for 3,000 years from now. Should anyone come across this, I want it to be right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Should we talk about our first sponsor for this week before we move on?
Yeah, speaking of writing and getting it right.
Oh, actually, do you know what? Sorry, before we do that, I must mention, because we've just spoken about the Minnesota Bloggers Conference.
Yes.
You were on a panel called the Podcasting... It was called Questions. It was basically the podcasting panel at the Minnesota Bloggers Conference.
Yes, it was basically a closing keynote panel discussion about podcasting.
And you sent me an email because you needed me to give you some answers to some questions, so you could be well-placed, numbers and such. And you also sent me the questions, and I was quite jealous of you because I wanted to answer them. So it's basically about planning podcasts, producing, and publishing.
Mm.
So next week...
Fantastic.
Yeah, the really great questions, and it looks really interesting. So... next week, we're going to run through those questions, and I'll try and give some answers along with you. So anybody that is interested in how the sausage is made, as was a previous episode of this show that I know was quite popular right at the very, very start, we're going to be doing that next week. So I will say, if you have any questions that you would like to know what we do, how we create the show, and anything like that, if you've got any questions or comments or anything like that you'd like for us to add to that episode, because it's probably mainly going to be focused around that, best way to do that is to get in touch with us via our contact form, which you can find at 70decibels.com/contact. If you get in contact with us there, then we will be able to add those to the list.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
So our first sponsor this week is Drafts for the iPhone and the iPad. Now, Drafts is an iOS application, obviously, that I love quite dearly, and I've been using it for some time. Now, what Drafts does is it's basically you open the app, and you're presented with an empty text field, and it's very super fast, and it basically gives you a place to capture ideas and thoughts, maybe some notes, or maybe you've got some ideas for some status updates for one of the many social networks. You can capture all of those in Drafts, and you can keep as many draft posts as you like in the application. But what's really great about it is how it lets you share them with just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of potential places. So let me give you an idea. So once you've captured something, you can use Drafts to output to email, text message, create a calendar, post to Twitter, Facebook, Dropbox, Evernote, or print. And then using URL schemes from other applications, you can send them to external apps, like you can add a new task in OmniFocus or Things. You can add a calendar event in Agenda. You can send to Tweetbot. There's just so many apps that you can send your Drafts to. It really is incredible. So when you open it, it launches to a new blank field ready for you to type. You don't need to fiddle around creating a new note or anything like that. You just launch and type. And since Drafts, the Drafts developer, Agile Tortoise, they recently released their new iPad application, they've implemented super fast and really easy syncing between Drafts on your iPad and iPhone, which makes sure you always have your notes with you. I was playing around with this, and I was sort of writing on one thing and checking in, and it appeared on the other, and I was getting very excited, Pat. I'm quite sad, really. Drafts for iPhone is $1.99 in the App Store, and Drafts for iPad is $2.99, an absolute steal. You can visit agiletortoise.com/drafts to learn more. But we have a special giveaway. We have some copies of the application to give away.
This is really cool.
Yeah, which is absolutely fantastic. I'm really pleased that I did this. Now, all you need to do, go to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at 70decibels.com/enough, or they may be in your podcatcher of choice if you use Instacast or Downcast or something like that. And you will see a link in the sponsors section that says, click here and tweet this text. So if you want to win a copy, click here and tweet this text. You just click the link. It'll take you through and just show you some text. Copy it, tweet it, and you may be in for a chance of winning. I'd also ask, like with our giveaway last week, if you follow at 70 decibels on Twitter, it gives us a great way to get in contact with you if you are one of the lucky winners. So thank you very much to Drafts for sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, I just want to go on to say that Drafts is just a great app. It is extremely well designed, and it is made by a developer who cares.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, who really does care, and who's like, I mean, really is trying to make it the best of its breed for what it does. And there are a few, you know, there are others out there, but this is just, you know, one that has an attention to detail and more importantly, an attention to here is, I think, the way, you know, here's the thing that I think is the way this app could be the most useful to people, right? And it really works hard at doing just that. Could not recommend it more highly if for no other reason than to support great developers doing great, caring work.
Exactly. Now, we gave away something last week. We gave away a Block
The Apple TV dealy bopper.
Winner was contacted. Neil J. Savola, was the winner. And so congratulations, Neil.
Yeah, and, Neil's awesome. He's lucky to get it.
So indeed. So very much like last week, if you want to be in for a chance of winning another of our competitions, all you need to do is just make sure you go to the show notes and tweet that tweet. So it's just
Yeah. Print,
just says,
I had no idea. Like, if we just changed the format, people would, like, give us stuff to give away.
That's crazy, isn't it? So lucky.
If you had told me that, we would have done this years ago.
I know. Again, if you're a developer or whatever and you want to give things away, like, I enjoy doing this. I like giving to people, so just get in contact.
Me too.
The second topic in our Google Doc today is under the heading... Let me just get it. Oh, I've lost. Where is it? Oh, there's always a sandwich, is what you are saying to me is our next topic. And
there's always a sandwich.
I guess it depends if you work in a deli or not. Should we move on?
No. Okay, so here's the deal. So to my subscription newsletter folks today, I wrote a thing. It's a treatise I've had for a long time about the two types of personalities, I guess, methodologies that people bring with them into the kitchen. Those that enter the kitchen to prepare food usually get two types of people. I like to term these two types of people the cook and the baker. Now, the baker is usually the person that bakes. Or, more importantly, they cannot do anything of value in the kitchen in general unless they have a recipe. A recipe with measurements and a strict understanding of what goes in where and how much and when and clear directions and everything that they cook in the kitchen, they cook from a recipe and they follow the recipe to a letter. And this makes absolute sense, especially in baking, right? Because in baking, too much of one thing versus another could be the difference between cake and mush. Right? Between a biscuit and a rock, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you really can, if you deviate too much with certain items, I would say with most items in any sort of baking recipe, you can get tremendously different results. And so there really is no room for error. The recipe makes sense. Cooks, on the other hand, and I count myself amongst this group, kind of treat recipes as a rough guide. This is one of the reasons they don't bake very much. And when they do, they certainly don't enjoy it as much as they enjoy cooking, because, you know, we like to kind of screw around with the ingredients. We like to put a little bit extra in here, or maybe change and substitute this out for this other thing there, and to kind of have fun with it. That's how we have fun in the kitchen, is by kind of experimenting. And in fact, if you give a cook just kind of a few ingredients that are complementary and send them into the kitchen with zero instructions whatsoever, just say, go take this stuff and make something. That's like, you know, that's nirvana. That's like, that's party day, right? Because it could be anything. And that's what we love as cooks. We love the fact that, you know, we can go in and take these three ingredients and make them one way, or in have one thing, and then like take these same three ingredients, mix them up this different way, and have this completely different thing with no plan, rhyme, reason, recipe, measurements, what have you. And you will also find with cooks that if you send them to the kitchen to do a baking job, if they are adept to know which ones they can modify just a bit, they almost always will. For instance, if one cup of chocolate chips is good, 1.5 is probably just a little bit better. You know what I mean? And so, So, you know, those are really the two distinct type of personalities. My wife is very much a baker, and I'm glad that she is, and I'm glad that she enjoys baking. It is not unusual to come to our house and just find, say, a pan of brownies sitting on the oven. Just they are available for anyone who wants to cut one and take one passing by. Or, you know, she'll just come home and make fresh bread. Why? Just to have fresh bread. No other reason. She's usually the one who, if we have a function to bring food to, you know, let's say we're going to some memorial service and she's the one who bakes some cookies or makes a cake. But that's also the reason why I almost always end up doing the majority of our day-to-day cooking, is because I like to cook, and I like to work on the top of the stove and not have any plan. And at 4:30, when, you know, I want to have dinner on the table by 6, say, you know, let me go look and see what's in the kitchen and see what I can throw together. And just throw something together, something I've never made before and may never make again. And that's the beauty of it, right, is that that's the fun for me. But I think that there's another thing, too. Another thing a little bit deeper than that. Cooks allow themselves the permission to fail. Because cooks know that part of learning how to cook is learning from the failure. Knowing when you've put in too much salt, or that you forgot to put oil on the bottom of the pan and now you've burnt up a pan that you have to spend 2 hours scraping to get the gunk off the bottom, or, you know, but this is how you learn, right? And you learn by giving yourself the permission to fail. And the reason that cooks are able to give themselves permission is the idea that, hey, if I really screw things up, if I really botch this up, if this thing I put together is completely inedible, there's always sandwich. There's always a sandwich. I can always just make a sandwich and we can call that done. And so therefore, I've allowed myself the permission to fail because there's always an answer, and it may not be the meal that you want. It may not be the meal that you set out to have, but hey, it's something, and it'll be just fine if things completely go south. And I think that we can apply that to other areas of life, that we need to give ourselves the permission for things to go horribly wrong, because only by doing so will we ever learn what success looks like, right? There's a saying that I just caught the other day, and it kind of goes along with another saying. I'm not sure if I'm getting this right, but it's amateurs. Was it amateurs work until they succeed? Professionals work until they can't fail.
Right.
Or practice, right? So amateurs practice until they succeed. Professionals practice until they can't fail. And I think that that's a very similar idea. The idea that only through going in with the idea that you're going to fail and that you're going to learn from that failure and you're going to keep failing until you can't fail anymore. Knowing that there's always a sandwich.
It's always good to have a sandwich.
There's something to be said for a sandwich. One of my favorite little pieces of knowledge is that I guess in Germany, this is not so much the case any longer, but it used to be pretty widespread from an eating habit perspective that they generally have, say, you know, cold cuts, lunch and meat and some cheeses and some bread and make sandwiches for their dinner. Traditionally, lunch is the big meal of the day in Germany, and dinner is usually served basically sandwich style, very light. Hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
Not so much the case anymore, but it used to be. So, yeah, always a sandwich. I think, you know, that's people need to go easy on yourself a little bit. We work so hard to please everyone and to get things right and to always be perfect and to always be lauded. But, you know, how many three-pointers actually turned out to be bricks before Michael Jordan could shoot, you know, several in a row effortlessly, right? How many times did Michael Phelps nearly drown before he was able to be the fastest man in the pool, right? These things are all about failure, not about success. So, do we want to talk about some things we're loving?
Before we do that, though,
we have to talk about Squarespace.
Something that we will love eternally, and that's Squarespace.
Yeah.
So Squarespace, you know, we've been speaking about these guys for a while because they are so awesome, of course. Squarespace are the service that give you absolutely everything you need to create an amazing website, blog, portfolio, your home online, no matter what that might be. Squarespace is flexible enough that it will allow you to create something truly beautiful, no matter what your purpose for a website will be. I've told you, you know, I speak quite a bit about things like their responsive web design and stuff and how, you know, you don't have to worry about what your site's going to look like when you're using Squarespace. You don't have to worry about what it's going to look like on a mobile device. Because when you add images or design pages with the new version of Squarespace, Squarespace 6, your entire site, it restructures automatically to make sure that it fits nicely in every web browser on every device, and it maintains the beauty of the site's design. They do some really magical stuff. If you go to any Squarespace 6 site, on your web browser on your desktop, and you take like the little the size slider and you just drag it around, you'll see all of the elements of the site move around, and then you'll get a good idea as to how it's going to look like on different size devices, which I think is really awesome. Something that I use and love daily is the Squarespace app. So with the Squarespace app, you can post to your blog on the go or to your site on the go, but you can also manage your statistics. So if you are a fan of stats, then you're able to manage your stats wherever you go. So you're able to see how many people are coming to your site, what your page views are. You can see search terms. You can see how many subscribers you have. And it gets even more in-depth on the web, and they have beautiful charts and everything. And these are real-time analytics, and they're built right into Squarespace. And in my opinion, I haven't been able to – I've used all the different types of statistic tracking, but I prefer the stuff that's built right into Squarespace more than anything else. It just works so great. If you have a blog elsewhere, you can import your content from your current blog and easily set up sharing and syncing with social media accounts as well. So it will allow you to really make that transition nice and painless, because that is exactly what Squarespace believe in. If you have a blog elsewhere or a site elsewhere and you want to try out Squarespace, well, I can give you a 2-week free trial so you can do just that. Go to squarespace.com/70decibels to activate your trial. And if you decide to purchase, Squarespace is only $10 a month for their standard plan and $20 a month for their unlimited plan. But if you sign up for 1 year, not only do you get a free custom domain name, you get 20% off that price. And if you sign up for 2 years, you'll get 25% off. And what's more, if you use the offer code 70decibels9, that's 70decibels9 at checkout, you'll get an additional 10% off whatever your first order is. So if you sign up monthly, you get 10% off that. If you sign up for one of the annual or biannual plans, you'll get an additional 10% off the annual price. So if you sign up for 2 years, you get 35% off that monthly price, which is a really, really great deal. So you should do that. That's what I think anyway, Pat. I think people should sign up. I think people should sign up for 10 years. If Squarespace offered a 10-year subscription plan, I would pay for that. Because I am a big proponent of their service, in case people hadn't already noticed. Thank you very much to Squarespace.
And this is not just something that we advertise. This is something, you walk to walk. 70s to Decibels, built on top of Squarespace, right? Yep.
If I have a website, it's at Squarespace. My personal blog is there, mikehurley.net and 70decibels.com, both Squarespace sites. And I was using Squarespace long before I was affiliated with them in any way. Thanks to Squarespace for supporting Enough and their continued fantastic and well-loved support of 70 Decibels.
Yeah, for sure.
So what are you loving, sir? Tell me.
So there's this new phone out. I'm not sure if you've heard.
Well, I know that I love mine, but that's not what I'm going to talk about today.
Yeah, I know. Well, it looks great. And there's some chatter about the maps thing, about the scratching thing, and just like any time Apple changes the iPhone, there's always something. I'm not sure if people remember this correctly, but when the white ones first came out, remember when they first introduced the white model? First of all, it took forever for them to come out after they announced there would be a white model. And then when it finally did, there was like some discoloration issues that were happening, likely due to heat or whatever. And so those were a problem for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever Apple makes these changes and moves, there's going to be something. And it seems like this week's something or this time's something is the black ones, I guess, can scratch pretty easily. The anodized coating that they have on the aluminum back can get scratched or nicked fairly easily. And because it's silver underneath, it's especially noticeable or something like that. And so my birthday's coming up next week, next Monday to be exact. And my wife was actually planning on getting me an iPhone 5. It's almost becoming an every 2 year tradition. I know what my birthday present is going to be, and that's going to be the new iPhone that was just announced and released, right? It just so happens that because I got an iPhone, my first iPhone on my birthday, I now will be getting an iPhone on my birthday every 2 years, right? So she was planning on doing this and had not planned any other birthday presents. But yesterday I started to think to myself, you know what? I don't really need it. I still love my iPhone 4. As a matter of fact, it seems a little bit snappier with iOS 6. It's working just fine for what I use it for. I'm not sitting there going, oh my God, this thing is so slow and all, maybe it's because I actually haven't used a 5 for any length of time, so I haven't reset my expectations as to what it should be. But I'm pretty happy with how it is. I really love it still, and so I told her I don't want an iPhone 5 for my birthday.
Crazy, man.
I know. I said, I'll wait a little bit. I'll wait until some of these, maybe some of the scratching issues go away. I still think that some interesting things might be happening in October, and maybe I'll see what happens there, because I still have an iPad Gen 1, and maybe I might want something to replace that before the year is out here. And, maybe I might want to. So I basically said, listen, I want to take a indefinite rain check on my birthday present. Because it might be very well that either A, I decide to get the 5, but, I let some of these issues get ironed out first. Or maybe it will be that I decide to just stick with the four for a while and remain happy with that. Maybe replace my iPad instead. Who knows? So, yeah, the thing I'm loving, I'm still loving the iPhone 4. I think I'm going to continue to love it. I think it's just fine. You know, I'm not missing not having Siri. I'm not missing anything that I haven't had yet. Well, and how could I?
I'm pleased for you.
I know you're very happy with yours.
Yeah, I'm very happy. It's the best. Obviously, as you would expect, but it's the best phone I've ever made. But
yeah,
there are things about this that it's a big leap. I mean, and there are things about this phone that are just incredible that you kind of need to use. I mean, the speed of it is great, but for me, the screen is just, you know, right. It's great that it's larger. That the way the screen looks for me feels as big a jump as the Retina did. Just the things that they've done about color saturation and you know, the way that they bring the pixels closer to the glass, and it's just incredible. It looks incredible. But that's not the thing that I'm loving. I've wanted to talk about this for weeks, actually, so I'm glad that I finally got around to it. It's a podcast that I love very, very much, and it's high on my list, actually. It's fast becoming one of my favorite podcasts to listen to, bar none.
Wow. That's saying a lot. Okay.
It's from our friends at 5x5, and it's Brett Terpstra's show, Systematic.
Yeah. God, that guy is amazing.
It's difficult to kind of say what the show is about. Like, Brett just has a different guest on every week, and they kind of just talk about creativity and working. Basically, the description that he gives the show is a weekly discussion about creativity, productivity, work, and everything Mac and iOS. And he's had some great guests. He's had people like Sean Blanc, David Sparks. Has he had David Sparks on? No, he hasn't had that. Ignore that. I'm thinking about Generational now, which is our new show. But because I just saw Gabe Weatherhead, Mac Drifter, who is hosting a new show on our network called Generational. But he had Brett Kelly on, who is on our network. He's had Merlin on, many other people as well. It's just such a great show. Brett Terpstra, he's kind of, to me, feels like a natural without meaning to be. Right, because the show just feels like a conversation between him and the other person, and he's just doing a really stellar job, and I think that the way that he reads sponsors is potentially one of the best in the business for actual reading. So, not that many other people will care about that, but you know, obviously, I pay attention to
things. Maybe we'll discuss. Some of that in next week's episode.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to hear you kind of expound your ideas on that and how it should be done and how it should be done well and things like that. Mainly because I think that, you know, we've now had years of that, of this from, you know, thanks to, like, you know, oh, geez, you know, This Week in Tech, you know, network, and, you know, the 5x5 and 70 decibels. And I mean, we are kind of used to hearing sponsors on podcasts by this point, in our, listening evolution. And there, you're right. There are some times it's done very well, and other times you're just like, it's very clear that they're just reading from some script and it doesn't, you know, it sounds very generic. If that makes sense.
Yep. That makes perfect sense. I actually have some good thoughts on that, so I've added that to the doc for next week.
Yeah, please do.
It's just a great show. I've actually got Brett on Command Space in a couple of weeks. I'll be talking to him about the show and how much I enjoy it. So
that's exciting.
Amongst many other things, I'm sure. But it's a great show. Big fan of the work that Brett does, and big fan of 5x5 stuff in general. So if for any reason you have not listened to this show yet, I would suggest that you go ahead and do. And obviously there'll be a link in the show notes for that, which I think brings us about to the end of this episode, Mr. Roan. So places to find you would be patrickroan.com, minimalmac.com, You're Patrick Roan on app.net, which is the social place for people to find
you. I'm Patrick Roan just about everywhere, by the way.
People can email you if they want at patrick@patrickroan.com.
Love email. Yeah.
Because he's an email kind of guy. I am iMike, I-M-Y-K-E, on the places that you would like to find me. If I'm there, that's how you'll find me. Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of Enough.
Had a great time.
Indeed. As always, I am Mike Hurley, and here's Patrick Roan. And until next time,
we'll chat later.
Cheers.
Cheers.